Mr. Chairman and friends, I very deeply appreciate this opportunity that you have given me to be with you this afternoon. This is not said in any formal way, but I say it with very deep sincerity, because many times I have come to St. Louis, and this is the first time you have so graciously taken me into this place and into your fellowship. And therefore, I very deeply appreciate the kindness in the invitation that has come to me. I may say that had any other church in this place invited me, I would have said my come not for other purposes than to attend the meeting of the National Council of Churches here, and so I cannot accept your invitation. But because it came from Concordia Seminary, and because I value very highly this contact, I have been very happy to accept your very kind and gracious invitation. So I say to you, thank you from the bottom of my heart. I want to say a few words as to an Asian's reaction to the Lutheran World Federation Assembly meeting recently held at Minneapolis. As you know, I stand before you as one of the vice presidents of the Lutheran World Federation, having been elected to that position at Minneapolis a few months ago. So I had better be very careful as to what I say about the Lutheran World Federation, lest my name become mud hereafter. However, I have been always one who has been rather notorious for its frankness. Therein lies my strength, and certainly my weakness. To me, as an Asian Lutheran, coming to this great Lutheran World Assembly at Minneapolis was a tremendous inspiration. Of course, it has been to many in this country itself. But to us who are small minority churches in Asia, small groups in India, in Ceylon, in Indonesia, in Taiwan, in the Philippines, in Hong Kong, and in Japan, to come together in a world Lutheran group and to have fellowship with them is indeed even a greater thrilling experience than to you who belong to this country and who have big Lutheran churches and who have the strong, virile life in your church. For us to come to Minneapolis and to realize that the Lutheran World Assembly represented about 50 million of the 70 million Lutherans in the world was a tremendous fact of encouragement in our loneliness, in our tasks as Lutheran Christians in Asia. Perhaps a point that you may not fully enter into and appreciate, but nevertheless I think you can understand what I am driving at, that it brought to us the sense of Lutheran solidarity, of being a member of a Lutheran world family. That was indeed a tremendous inspiration and encouragement, and I think the inspiration of that meeting will last with us for some years to come. And secondly, I think the theme was very opportune. If it was some heavy theme more in terms of theological concepts without definite relevance to the world problems, possibly the assembly would not have meant as much it does to us. Christ frees and unites. It is something of tremendous importance to the people of Asia, who are just now getting their political freedom and asking, is political freedom everything? Is there something more? What price freedom? And people who are divided in many groups, to hear about Christ being the unifying element. I say that that theme was a very great relevance to our situations in Asia. And therefore, we who came from the younger churches were greatly attracted to the theme, and on the whole were greatly helped by the findings of the Third Assembly. I am glad they do not call them the findings. They simply use the term the thesis. The report was received, not adopted. The report was received and commended to the consideration of the churches of the Lutheran World Federation. That is the status in which we have that whole report standing before us today. I think it was Dr. Franklin Fry who said that when the first World Assembly of the Lutheran World Federation met in Lund, at Lund the Lutherans stayed together in one place, had fellowship together. And then he said, 5 years later, in 1952, when the Second Assembly met in Hanover, they worshipped it together. And then in 1957, when we met as a Lutheran body of the world at Minneapolis, the Lutherans not only stayed together and worshipped together, but began to think together. And it is possibly true that as the years have rolled by, there has been evolving a common Lutheran mind, whatever that might mean. But you understand what I mean by that phrase, of a certain agreement, in spite of differences, upon certain important matters concerning the life of the churches of the Lutheran World Federation. So I think the Minneapolis carried us one step farther. And one of the things that I have noticed in all these world gatherings of recent years, of the last 15 years, for the first time in the world's history or in the history of Christendom, you are bringing the minds of the scholars of the church to bear upon the problems of the church. The study department of the World Council of Church. First time beginning to bring world scholars, Christian scholars, banded together to think about these problems of the World Council of Church. Likewise, the study department of the Lutheran World Federation, and all through the assembly, bringing scholars and pundits of the Lutheran Church to think about these problems of the Lutheran churches in the world is indeed a rather recent development in Christendom. And one thanks God for what the Lutheran World Federation has been able to achieve in terms of literature that has been published. One of their decisions has been to take the study of Roman Catholicism that has frightened poor Roman Catholics in this country a great deal. That the Lutherans are beginning to study them. And so, but nevertheless, that is an important decision that has been taken by the Lutheran World Federation. All to the good. Then I think the Lutheran World Federation has for the first time spoken a very definite word on nuclear weapon. Possibly some of you have read the Christian Century, which is very famous in this country for caustic remarks upon Lutherans. Said, now for the first time, the Lutherans have begun to realize they are in this world. They have indeed made a pronouncement relative to this world. Isn't that a wonderful achievement for Lutherans? They have said that nuclear weapons ought to be controlled and an agreement on an international basis should be secured. And if it is not secured, then Lutherans, as citizens of their countries, should bring pressure to bear upon their government to arrive at an agreement whereby they would take a risk and for a short period of 2 years or 3 years abstain from testing of these weapons. Now that's the first time that the Lutheran World Assembly or a big Lutheran body has been able to pronounce. I think we must not take too much credit for this ourselves as Lutherans. We have in fact copied what the World Council of Churches Central Committee did at New Haven a few weeks ago before the World Assembly met. And Dr. Frederick Nolde, a Lutheran of the Mount Airy Theological Seminary in Philadelphia, was the director of the Church's Commission on International Affairs and had a great deal to do with passing that resolution by the Central Committee. And he was also present at Minneapolis, so that he being common between the two bodies, this resolution was put through. I was in the committee working on this, and I know the great amount of hesitation on the part of some people and the impatience on the part of a larger number of people that something ought to be said and not just be too diplomatic and keep silent. And finally, that word was said. And that, I think, is an important announcement that we should bear in mind. I have, however, two rather critical remarks on the whole of the achievement of the assembly. It was a word assembly, and I thought that there would be present many, many Lutherans from different countries of different colors together at Minneapolis. There were the white and the brown and the yellow and the black, but the black who were there were mostly from Africa, and they were conspicuously absent from this country of the United States of America. And I had oftentimes wondered, why is it that when a great big Lutheran body meets, and that in the United States of America, the American Negro Lutheran should be so conspicuously absent? Is it because that the Lutheran churches do not work amongst the Negro? And why don't they? If the Negro forms such a large proportion of your population, why is it that the Lutheran Church is not working amongst them? To say that we don't work amongst them, therefore they are not there, it's not a very good answer. It's only excusing ourselves. And in the second place, even of those churches which are working amongst the colored population in this country, not many were chosen to come to or to represent their churches to come to Minneapolis. Therefore, to me as an Asian, coming there, this was a very striking thing, as apart from many other world conferences that I have hitherto attended in my own life. And this was not a remark that I alone make, that many Asians who came, they met many African Lutherans, but they didn't meet many American Negro Lutherans in this country. And that was, to a certain extent, a very conspicuous absence. And I think the Lutheran churches in the world should do some real heart searching on this matter. The second disappointment to me is that while the theme was so opportune, especially in an Asian context, Christ frees and unites. If you read through the whole thesis, the findings, the report, you hear a great deal about the freedom and largely of a religious type, but not one word about the political freedom. Is not the freedom of man to govern himself politically one of the biggest issues today before the churches and the governments of the world? To us in the East, colonialism, imperialism is far more a problem than communism is. Of course, in America, your problem largely is, I think in America, as I look at it, you have two big problems. One problem is communism, and the other problem is parking your automobile. But to us in the East, one of the biggest problems is freedom, political freedom. If anybody thinks that colonialism is dead in Asia since a few countries have achieved their independence, you are not realistic. Colonialism is disappearing, but has not disappeared yet. It is fighting its last battle and fighting very strongly. And some of the actions of the United States of America somehow make the people of Asia think that you are backing these people up, though innately you are not an imperialistic or colonial-minded people. But somehow you have the knack of backing the wrong horse all the time. Not in one single case have we found United States coming and saying soundly, yes, these people who have been ruled by colonialism so long, Algiers or Morocco or Tunisia or any of these countries, Cyprus, the only time when you did speak and the world listened to you, and particularly Asia, rejoiced when you took that uncompromising stand on the question of Suez. But even then, first time you were a little wobbly, and finally a strong stand was taken. And I, as an Asian Lutheran, coming to this great conference, which talked about freedom, and in the last day when we had the closing festival, when the voice asked those five sharp questions, one of the questions is, Christ frees, you say, but has the church stood for political freedom? Where has it stood? Where has it fought? It has not done so. A very feeble answer, in my opinion, was given. In fact, it serves that thesis. You don't find a single line talking about this aspiration of the peoples of the world. To me, that is rather disappointing. And possibly it was written by a group of people to whom this was not a problem. If this Lutheran World Federation Assembly had met in Asia, that would have been one of the biggest problems that we would have had to tackle and some pronouncement made. Another of the things in which I found that we were rather weak was the question of unity. Again, the critical voice at the closing festival service asked, how dare you Christians talk about Christ uniting when you are, as a Christendom, divided into so many sects and divisions and denominations? And what did the Lutheran World Federation Assembly say on that subject? It said to the Lutherans, try intercommunion. You have an inner unity, let it be expressed in a physical way. And it's on the question of larger unity, it said, study. Study this question much more, and from the biblical point of view. And that is about all that the report said on this very vital question of unity amongst Christians and unity amongst Lutheran Christians, which are to us from the Asian point of view, which is quite different from the American point of view, very vital question. And I personally confess that I have found very little inspiration or help from the findings of the Lutheran World Assembly at Minneapolis. I submit these observations of mine appreciative and critical, and ask you to consider them. I may not be entirely correct in my critical remarks, but it may point out the way in which some of us in Asia have reacted to the Lutheran World Assembly findings. Now, from the world scale of the Lutheran Federation, let me pass on to the Indian scene on a national federation of Lutheran churches. Christianity in India is no newcomer. A fact that very few people in the world seem to know. Many people in my own country think that Christianity came into India with the advent of the British, which is absolute nonsense. Christianity was in India for centuries. There is a tradition that St. Thomas, the disciple of Jesus Christ, came into India in 52 AD. 18 miles from where I come from, Madras, there is a place called St. Thomas Mount. And on the top of the mount, you have a great big cathedral. And if you go in, they will show you the place where they say St. Thomas was buried. In Mylapore, a suburb of Madras, there is a Roman Catholic cathedral where they show you some bones, which they say are the bones of St. Thomas. Now, whether this tradition is absolutely correct or not, there is no denying the fact that in the west coast of India, there have been Thoma Christians for centuries. And the Christian church had existed from the 5th century onward. We have objective, authentic proof to show that there had been, and there has been in the west coast of India, a Syrian church from East Syria, which has gone on with a continued history of 15 centuries. Sometimes I must confess it is amusing for me when people in this country who haven't had 15 centuries of Christianity call the Syrian church an younger church. The second advent of Christianity to India came with the Portuguese. Francis Xavier, the great missionary that went about, came into Goa, into the west coast of India, and was very successful, and he planted the church. Robert D. Nobili nurtured the plant that had been put into the soil by Francis Xavier. And so the Roman Catholic Church has grown, and today you have in India 5 million Roman Catholics. Protestant Christianity began to take root in India, or got started in India, in the early years of the 18th century. In 1706, King of Denmark, Frederick IV, was very eager to send a Danish missionary to India. By that time, he had established a Danish East India Company. And that company came in as traders, but as has been the history of Asia, traders became rulers very soon. And so the Danish East India Company became a ruling company and had occupied the part of India called Trankubar. And Frederick IV was very eager that some of his subjects should go out not only to trade with India's merchants, but also to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. He looked around Denmark and he didn't find a single Dane who was willing to go to India as a missionary. But many Danes were willing to go to India to get rich quick. And so he looked beyond Denmark into the country of Germany. And there he found a young university man by the name of Bartholomew Ziegenbalg, to whom he sent the call to go to India. And Bartholomew Ziegenbalg, a university man with a great future before him, answered the call of Christ, and he said, "Here am I, send me." And so in 1706, He arrived with Pluto at the seaport town of Trankubar, about 250 miles south of Madras. These two men were not welcome. The Danish general in charge of the dance fort, a British fort at Trankubar, chained them, put them into a prison, and said to them, I'm willing to release you if you don't preach the gospel and clear out of this place. But they persisted that they had come as missionaries, and he might do whatever he would like to, but they cannot give up preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. After 3 or 4 months of imprisonment, by the order of the King of Denmark, they were released, and they started preaching in that part of India. And as a result of their labor, my church, the Tamil Evangelical Lutheran Church, has come into existence. And it was most remarkable experience for me. 250 years later, in the year 1956, I was consecrated 4th Bishop of Trankubar. In that very dance fort, next to the cell, where 250 years ago, the founders of my church, Bartholomew Ziegenbalg and Pluchau, were imprisoned. Through the blood of the martyrs, God built his church. And so the Lutheran church grew. And the Lutheran church sent out many of its leaders into other churches. Really, my Lutheran church is the oldest Protestant church. It amuses me these days when I read books on the story of the church. The other day at Union Seminary, I was reading a fascinating book on the story of the church. And as I came to the story of the church in the East, here I came across the statement that William Carey was the first Protestant missionary to the Orient. And yet, nearly a century ago, before that, there was a Lutheran who had come to India, and he was the first Protestant missionary of any denomination. Even university or Union Seminary professors have to be educated. And there is my church at the present time, and I am here before you, largely because of what those great 2 missionaries were able to do in my country. It is on record that when these missionaries came, they were sent by the King of Denmark, and later on German Lutheran missionaries were sent by an Anglican missionary society, the Church Missionary Society, and the Society for the Propagation of the Gospel of Jesus Christ. At one time, the SPG in England had 60 Lutheran missionaries. Did them good too. The Book of Common Prayer was used by these Lutheran missionaries and did them much good too. And in fact, it was a Lutheran that first translated the Book of Common Prayer into my language, Tamil, and not an Anglican. In the year 1879, the Leipzig mission was not able to carry on this work, and so it was turning over a great portion of this work to the SPG, the Society for the Propagation of the Gospel of the Anglican Church. So on one particular night, in that particular area, the Lutheran Christians went to their bed that night as honest to goodness Lutherans. And the next morning they woke up as 100% Anglicans. And their ministers were never reordained. And they and their children were the fellows who began to talk their heads off about apostolic succession, which they never had. So sometimes we tease our Anglican brethren that the Lutheran Church founded the Anglican Church in India. And there is some truth in that too. But anyhow, that is the way the Lutheran Church began. And then the missionary societies of Norway and Sweden and Denmark and Finland and Germany and Canada and the United States of America have all come in to do the work in India. With the result that we have today, 11 Lutheran churches in India. And the total membership of these 11 Lutheran churches is 650,000. Not a small or insignificant body. We can take our stand and compare favorably with other Protestant churches in India. For the past 25 years or so, I have been doing my best to get Lutherans together, federated into one body. And I had foolishly imagined that it would be an easy job to get Lutherans together. But it has been very difficult. Finally, we have succeeded about 26 or 27 years ago to establish a federation of evangelical Lutheran churches. And that federation has been in existence for over a quarter of a century. And as you think of Japan or any other country, they have been trying to bring in their federation of Lutheran churches, but they have not succeeded. But in India, we have. And of the 11 Lutheran churches, 10 have joined the federation. Your own Missouri Lutheran Church is not a member of the Lutheran Federation in India. Personally, I am hoping and praying for the day, and the day I hope will not be far off, when we shall be happy to welcome into the fellowship of the Lutheran family in a national scale in India, the church that you and your missionaries have been able to establish in my country. But very happy relationships exist between us and the Missouri Lutheran Church. The Missouri Lutheran Church is now called itself the India Evangelical Lutheran Church. Very modest people. Between the Federation and the India Evangelical Lutheran Church, as I say, there is a very cordial feeling of goodwill and relationship, and especially during the war years. I remember with very great gratitude the Missouri Lutheran Church in America sending money to help the German missionaries. And you have stood by the orphaned churches, Lutheran churches and missions during that period. And even now, quite a few of your missionaries are taking a keen part, taking a keen interest in the refugee service and relief service. In fact, the Secretary for the South is a Missouri Lutheran missionary from this country. So, as I say, at every meeting of our federation, we have always people from your church who come in as observers. And as I say, we are hoping that the time will come soon when we would have full fellowship with you in a federation, which is not a church, which is not a church union. It's only a coordinating body of the Lutheran Christians in India. Now that is one of the questions that I think that the mother church in this country ought to ask itself. What right has it to ask its daughter church in India not to federate with a federation of evangelical Lutheran churches in India? Should your difficulties and your problems become projected in a scene way out there, we are not responsible for your quarrels and differences in this country. And why should we become the victims? And why should we in India, as a Lutheran group, be divided into the Tamil Evangelical Lutheran Church, the Arcot Lutheran Church, and the India Evangelical Lutheran Church, all speaking the same language, Tamil, all living in the same area, just because missionaries came from different places and because money comes from different places, we today seem to be divided in amongst ourselves. And I want to say that word rather sharply to arouse your thinking. How far is it right for you to project this kind of a thing into a foreign country, a non-Christian country, where the majority are non-Christian people and do not understand all our divisions and differences and denominations? How far is it right to ask a young, growing daughter church to not cooperate with the rest of the Lutheran family? And to that extent, they are poorer. When the 10 bodies are together, working together, taking up common projects, for one body to plow its lonely furrow is not in itself a very healthy thing. A second problem that has risen to us from a Lutheran Federation point of view, we find the Missouri Lutheran Church, the India Evangelical Lutheran Church, member of the National Christian Council of Churches and Missions. And we ask ourselves, this is rather strange. These Missouri men who will not have fellowship with their own Lutheran Christians would go into a body like the National Council of Churches and Missions in India with Lutherans and Baptists and Presbyterians and whatnot, will have fellowship in that bigger body. But in the smaller body, in a federation, not a church union, in a federation, they would not have membership. How come? How do they reconcile these two? And I have been one who has been very much responsible, if I may say so, for the Missouri Lutheran Church coming as a member body of the National Christian Council of India, because it happened during my days of the General Secretaryship of the National Christian Council. Your missionaries used to have a great deal of trouble about getting missionary visas, and they will always turn to me as a fellow Lutheran in the National Christian Council. They wouldn't have much fellowship with me as a Lutheran, but when it came to questions of missionary visas, they claimed my help. And I never made any distinction at all, and in fact I put myself out to help them to get the missionary visas, and many a journey I had made to New Delhi in order to secure missionary visas for your missionaries to come to India. And I believe that made the heart a little softer, and possibly people thought that the National Christian Council may not be such a bad body as they thought it to be. And finally, for practical, pragmatic reasons, you have today membership in an all-inclusive body called the National Christian Council of India. And yet, on matters of principle, you are not a member of the Federation of Lutheran Churches in India. That, I say, ladies and gentlemen, is a very important question that you have got to think through. And let me add one word of caution here. The patience of the Indian Christian Lutherans is being sorely tried. And how long they will be patient to put up with this kind of a separation from amongst ourselves in a new self-governing India, I do not know. And if I were a leader of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Lutheran Church in America, I would certainly pay great heed to the new situation that has arisen in India today. And that is a note of warning that we must not miss. Now, we have been trying in India to bring about a united Lutheran Church in India. And we have said, of the 10 Lutheran churches which are members of the Federation, if 5 would come together, we would form a United Lutheran Church in India straight away and leave the others to come later on if they so desire. We have been so far able to get 4 of the churches agreeing to come join a United Lutheran Church in India. And for the lack of the 5th, this scheme has not gone into effect so far. Some of us have begun to wonder whether it will be a practicable thing to have an all India United Lutheran Church scattered in that vast country with different governments, church governments, some episcopal, some non-episcopal, and money coming from different countries, personnel from different countries, speaking different languages. Can you really have your working all India Lutheran Church? And so some of us have felt that it is very imperative that in the region we should, at least the Lutheran Christians should come together as church. And this has become very much of a struggle for us, a life and death struggle almost, in South India where I come from. We already got the great church of South India, 1 million membership, Anglicans, Methodists, Presbyterians, and the Congregational have gone together to form one united church of South India. And in the history of Christendom, this is the first time the Episcopalian church has merged with the non-Episcopalian church. And that church is 1 million strong, all over South India, right in the heart of that church of South India area. We find 3 Lutheran churches, all of them speaking the same language, all of them working amongst the same people. My Tamil Lutheran Church, the Arcot Lutheran Church of the Danish Connection, and your own Lutheran Church, which is largely Tamil-speaking and partly Malayalam-speaking. Now we have felt that possibly these 3 churches must come together and form one church of South India. In numbers at least we will be a fairly respectable body, and could, for our own survival as a Lutheran body with as against the Church of South India, we might have some chance. The Danish Lutheran Church, the Arcot Lutheran Church, is about 10,000. The Missouri Lutheran Church, US, is about 30 to 40,000. And my own Lutheran Church is about 75 to 80,000. So that if we put them all together, we would have somewhere roughly 150,000 Lutheran Christians banded together in one church, and though enveloped on all sides by the Church of South India. And so as we were talking about it, and met in a free Lutheran conference in your own town of Ambur in the Missouri area in India, strangely enough, the Missouri Lutheran missionary said to us, we would like to see a synodical conference come into existence, and that these 3 bodies go into a synodical conference. I was presiding over that meeting, and I had to scratch my head a good deal in order to find out what a synodical conference was. I had never heard about it before. I have heard of church councils, federations, but I've never heard about a synodical conference. And then they told me all the exegesis and the various versions and revised and inspired and so on of this idea of a synodical conference. And they said, this is our first step to get together. We are not a federation, we are not a church, but let us at least get together as a synodical conference. And we put down 2 conditions for the synodical conference to come into existence. One, we said, we must have a doctrinal basis. And the Missouri Lutheran Church will not come into any kind of a relationship with any other church unless they know what the doctrinal basis is. And we uphold them wholeheartedly for this stand. And we should like to work out their doctrinal basis. And so the Federation has appointed a commission now to look into this whole matter and draft. And many of your productions and publications have been very carefully read. And just before I came to this country, we met as 3 churches together at Kodaikanal Hill for nearly a week. And I've drafted a doctrinal basis, which is being submitted to the 3 Lutheran churches for their criticism or their approval. And then we said a second thing we ought to work out is a constitution for the synodical conference. And that constitution has also been worked out. And we commended this proposition of a synodical conference to our 3 churches. It came before my own Lutheran church. And unanimously, without a single dissent, my synod has accepted the synodical conference. It went before the Arcot Lutheran Church of the Danish Connection. Without a single vote, the Arcot Lutheran Church has accepted the synodical conference proposed. Unfortunately, to this day, we have not heard from the Missouri Lutheran Church. And they are saying to us, oh, Bishop Manikam, interpret silence as consent. It's a very dangerous thing, you know, to take silence as consent. And you land yourself into a lot of trouble if you go in life on that basis. And so we are waiting still for word from the India Evangelical Lutheran Church or the Missouri Lutheran Church here to tell us whether we could go ahead and work out the doctrinal basis and the constitution if the idea, the main idea of a synodical conference, meets the approval of the church in this country. I understand that three people are going to India, one is already there, who will be looking into this matter, and I sincerely trust that definite word would come to us. You cannot, as church bodies, responsible church bodies, merge into or come into a synodical conference unless we have in black and white the consent of the constituent body. That again, I say, is a very big problem before us. I want to say one last word and close now. And that last word is, it seems to me that the Lutheran Church in India has a very important part to play. Not only as a church, but as a Lutheran church. Because do not forget that India is a land of karma, of deeds, of people creating their punya, their merit, and attaining their moksha, their heaven, through deeds, through karma. Now, in a land which emphasizes deeds and merit in order to get one's salvation, how necessary and important is the Lutheran emphasis on the justification by faith and faith alone. Now that is a very important contribution that a Lutheran church in India can make. And today in India, the Lutheran church is one of the oldest Protestant churches in my country. My own church has 250 years of existence as the Lutheran community. And so, in the shaping of the life of the churches in India, the Lutheran Church has not only got a great heritage that it has inherited, but it also has a great role to play now and for the years to come in my country. I commend my church and other Lutheran churches to you. I thank you for the missionaries that have come out even from this seminary to our country, for their selfless life and for their breaking of the bread of life unto us and for the churches that have come into existence. And I ask you to continue to think of these Lutheran brethren of yours in India and pray for them. And many of you meet the challenge that comes to you from India to come over and help us. Thank you very much.
We thank you very much for your very forthright presentation, Dr. Monicum. And at this time, we have just a few moments for any questions which any of you would like to address to the bishop. Mr. Kepler?
Dr. Monicum.
I have indicated that, possibly I didn't make it quite explicit. I should have liked to have seen a very forthright statement on two aspects. You are called two Lutherans in their different countries to come under the unifying influence of that Christ which unites us. A word to the Lutheran family, as found in different countries, far more direct and forthright and compelling than what the assembly has been able to say. And I should have also liked the assembly to have made some pronouncement on the larger question of Christian unity. What is the role of the Lutheran Church? You see, put yourself in my place, in India. As an Indian Christian, as a Lutheran Christian, what is my duty? Should I be proud of my Lutheran heritage and be a member of a world Lutheran family known as the Lutheran World Assembly? which transcends national barriers, which is a great assembly of people from different countries, is a wonderful thing. Should I continue to do that on a world scale? Or should I express my unity in Christian witness in a non-Christian country like India, where we are only 3%, where our scandal of our division is one of the biggest stumbling blocks in the way of non-Christians accepting Christ? My duty is it to join with others to show my united witness in Christ Jesus. Now, those are the two horns of a dilemma. And I have not found any helpful word said to me in India or in Japan or in Indonesia as to this larger question of what the role of a Lutheran church in these countries, non-Christian lands. To you, it is more an academic matter, because more or less everybody is a Christian here, you have a Christian heritage, and so you merrily go along. But we in India, 252 Protestant denominations, and the non-Christian doesn't understand all this. And our great trouble is our witness, the evangelization of India, gets greatly handicapped because of our divided witness to Christ. So what is my duty? Now, on that, I wish the Lutheran World Federation had given me some very clear-cut instructions or helpful advice. I do not know enough of that to speak in a very authoritative or intimate way. Till now, there has been only one group, I believe, as more or less a sort of a synod in Ambor, that has some appearance of a church body. Otherwise, the mission, the council, is the ultimate body in India, and then it is subject to the mission board here. Now, I understand the attempt is to establish a self-governing, autonomous Lutheran church of your connection in my country. All along, there has been this integration of church and the mission going together. And many other bodies have integrated. In my own church, it is fully integrated. I am an Indian bishop, the head of my church. I have serving in my church 60 Swedish missionaries. I have in my church 10 German missionaries, 2 men and 8 women. And I have a number of Indian Christian ordained pastors. People belonging to different nations, yet together as one body, under one control. So really the missionaries' relationship with my church is in and with and under the church. Very good Lutheran expression. They are in the church, they are with the church, and they are under the church. And so that relationship has been effective. And this is true of other churches, other Lutheran churches in my country. And I believe you are trying to bring about that integration between church and mission in your own church in India. And it is to be welcomed a great deal. One last question.
In the beginning of your address, Dr. Michael, you mentioned that one of America's problems was communism. Could you clarify whether or not the Asians feel that they are communists?
No, I didn't mean in that way that your problem was that you were tending to be communist in this country and that you are overcoming it. But my idea was, in putting it that way, you are so worried about communism. Almost an Asian says, those people of America are obsessed with communism. That everything is either black or white. No grace, no in-between at all. And you think that anything, a nationalist move takes place for freedom, it must be the communists doing this. Getting all so excited and worried about communism. And we are sitting just close to communism. Next door to me is China. And I don't get so excited about communism as people in this country do. And to us it is something that most Asians talk about, not only Asians, but the people of Europe talk about. The country which is most excited today about communism is this country of America. And we say, well, why is that? Various explanations given. And that's why I said, your main problem seems to be how to combat communism. Perhaps that might be a better way of putting it.
Again, Dr. Monicom, for taking out the time to visit our campus. We would like to repeat once again that the question period scheduled at 6 p.m. has been canceled because of a previous commitment. Thank you all for your attendance.